extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies, CD9. I'm going to rip back the curtain. I'm not in New York City. I'm in my basement in Kansas City. In a food coma, man. I got the itis. It is Thanksgiving. We are with you. We're going to do our best here. Some red wine? Yes. Have I had seconds, maybe even thirds? Yes. Yeah.
Yes, but is it the brown liquor special? No.
Yes. Yes. Oh, man. I hope everybody out there is having a great day, whether you celebrate or not. You're north of the border. You don't. I had some people hit me up. Ollie Tremblay among them, legend in Montreal, being like, hey, man, it's regular Thursday for me. I'm eating soup in my living room. We had an MLS game today for the first time. The Audi 2021 MLS Cup playoffs rolling right along. Colorado Rapids, one of the stories of the season, hosting the Portland Timbers, couldn't get it done. Larrys Mabiala with the goal, scrappy one. He finds the moment, he finds the opening, he finds the loose ball, he pokes it in. 1-0. The Portland Timbers are moving on, but they do so without Sebastian Blanco. Ah, that hamstring. And without, for now at least, Dairon Asprilla. Merritt Paulson tweeting that they're going to go appeal this one to the independent review panel to see if they can reverse the violent conduct on that one. We shall see. A Tuesday night, two other games you missed. We have one conference finalist. We have three more conference semifinals to go. How are you guys feeling on this Thursday? What was the spread? Where are we at right now? What was the standout on the sides table, the dessert table?
The betting line. I was like, I don't know, plus 250.
What'd you make? Would you contribute to your family's merrymaking?
So I contributed nothing because I was covering MLS today. And so that was established. I also took the train here, so I couldn't bring anything. Well, we brought drinks. But the number one thing in my household is we make a challah stuffing.
Oh,
so you rip up pure, real challah. You toast it. Then you get all the veggies going. And it's juicy on the inside, but crunchy on the outside. It's the best thing that we have going on.
And let me help you out here, Charlie, and Dave already knows this. Challah French toast, if you're doing it with regular bread, if you're doing it with Texas toast, whatever, everything is not as good as challah French toast. That is the best. You have the braid, you have the unique shape, you have the nice sugar content to get yourself a good coloration from the butter. Just in case everybody out there needs a little bit of a hint in their French toast game, as well as their stuffing game, apparently.
Yeah, it's money. That's the number one thing for us. But and then everything else is fairly standard. I love a Thanksgiving. I know you've done your whole thing. I don't need to get back into it. I love Thanksgiving meal. It's my favorite.
I love it too. I'm not a turkey guy, though. You know what? I have not praised Mindy's turkey with the vigor that I should have. It was a wonderfully moist, delicious turkey. And I'm so thankful to my wife for making that and providing our family with that.
Charlie's
sustenance.
What is that?
Wonderful day.
I was like, moist.
What, you want your dry turkey, Charlie? Have your dry turkey.
But
have
he it. Made it like it was dripping wet. Almost
I mean, you're like, they got gravy and stuff, man. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, my contribution today was entertaining the children. Nice. It was, you stay out the kitchen because I can't cook for my life and just keep the kids occupied. And so spent a lot of time outside playing some tackle football. Then we got the ball out doing some skills, 1v1s, and then eat. And I went in. And so when you talk about that food coma, that itis, I'm on that level right now.
Before we get to the games and do what we can here on this Thanksgiving, again, hope you guys are having a great one at home, wherever you are. If you're not at home, with friends, and regardless, hope your day has been good. What's something you're thankful for this year? What's something that stands out to you in this little soccer world that we live in? And I'm not going to take the easy way out and be like, our listeners, I'm just so appreciative of everyone.
I actually thought you were going
to
go there.
At home.
I really
we are
thankful for all of you.
Yeah. No, I could go David Ochoa. We could go David Ochoa. I'll get the David Ochoa in a little bit, but I'll keep him out of that. Is there anything that stands out to you this year that just...
You know what I'm going to say, right?
You guys know what I'm going to say, right?
I don't.
Yeah, I know what Charlie's going to say.
He's going to, what, like 1-800 ticket sales or whatever?
Like, you got to come see the Revs play this year.
Nobody, he's thankful that the producers on the Revs broadcast gave him that opportunity because nobody does those in-game shills like Charlie does them.
No, you only get one shot at getting your season ticket packages and a shot at getting your playoff tickets in the process.
Ooh, so look at you. Yeah, you just hit it on this show. We're not even on the Revs broadcast.
And the season's over.
I think we can all be thankful after last year with no fans, getting back to full stadiums and the appreciation of like getting that in-game moment, like the vibes. I mean, I can appreciate just going into the stadium and calling games like that. That's what it's about. Like you forget how passionate the fans are and how they kind of carry that atmosphere, how they make the games that much more meaningful, and how it kind of lifts the play. It lifts the players, whether your team is down or whether your team is looking to win, like you just feel, and sometimes it's the animosity that you feed off of. So I love it all. And yeah, you know, Carlos Hill balled this year.
Charlie's job was fun. Charlie had a fun job. Still does. Still does.
Yeah, yes. He still does. There's a lot I would say in terms of the soccer world, but one specific thing that pops to my mind is just genuinely the Canadian men's national team. Well, the women's national team too, because they won a gold.
Are you Canadian, by the way?
I'm not, but
okay,
I think
because I would have thought you were the hot.
Yeah, do you have a visa?
Speak about the Canadian.
You probably have
team.
A visa though at this point, right?
Or property. He might.
But
have
for me,
real
it's
estate.
Just it's a few things. One, I fell in love with soccer through the international game, and I think every time there is, obviously COVID, there wasn't really a ton, right? Every time the international game comes back around, it kind of like pulls me back in. To a level of like the romantic side of the sport. And I came in being a USA fan where we were this underdog and going to like show the world what we could do, but also bring the sport to this country. And I mean, yeah, the US didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup, but like the US is good, right? Like there's a lot of really good players. The US has progressed, I think, to a different place. So to sort of re-experience that with Canada of like this underdog, this can't believe it, like, watching the Canada-Mexico game, the way they played, the way they won, reminded me of watching Charlie and those guys play against Spain. Of like, we knew that they wouldn't be scared, but the world didn't know that. And watching everyone watch that for the first time was like really cool and special. Now you're getting like the energy in the country, right? Drake's going to watch the game and text them and all the players on the Raptors and Maple Leafs and I don't know, name other hockey teams, they're into it. And like Justin Trudeau is at the training. And like to watch all that happen has kind of like reignited something for me of that. I still root for the U.S. men's national team, but it doesn't feel like an underdog situation every game the way it used to when I first started watching. And the way Canada has played has sort of like brought that back in for me.
I'm going to stay on that progress front too. And I think what I'm most thankful for is just sort of the day-to-day, I don't know, I don't think naivety is the right word because I know, but just like assumption that things are going to be a certain way in this little world that we have. And we still have so many things that we want to be better and that we want to say, okay, well, youth development needs to get here and hey, player spend and scouting's got to get here. And, you know, from a fan culture perspective, we could still get here and reach these people. But I was talking to somebody the other day and they hit me up and they're like, I want to do a feature on the Cosmo League. And I was talking to him about Brahim Diop and this moment in time and this wonderful like memory and experience that I had. And I was just sort of thinking through that snapshot of that Wizards team. Again, they were the Wizards and where they were playing. And I go to this a lot because it's so visceral for me at this independent league baseball stadium. I mean, that's where one of Major League Soccer's teams was playing with a goalkeeper with a cap on to keep the sun out of his eyes and Kai Kamara celebrating on a literal pitcher's mound. And this is not Yankee Stadium. You know what I mean? This is many, 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 many notches below, though it was still a beautiful venue. Like the pitch was great, all that stuff. But now we take for granted, like, you know, TQL Stadium comes on and we spend the year sort of like joking about Cincinnati not winning there, but we have a 27,000 seat stadium that is just picture perfect. And we have them all around the country. We have teams that scout and sign players for many millions of dollars, that sell players for that amount, that bring in academy players that make real differences in their teams, that have true depth in their squads. Like, if you go back, I was going back and looking at playoff games of the past, like 10, 12 years ago. And if you look at the players on the field and you compare the squads that you're seeing go head to head with what we have now, it's just not even close.
Yeah.
It's just not even in the same realm. Like, you know, the number of guys that you look at and you say, that guy is legit. He could entertain me. He could change the game. He could do X, Y, Z. Like, you're looking at like one, maybe two per team. And it just, it's easy to take it for granted on average. In this moment.
Charlie will. Charlie's about to bury the teams that don't have.
He's flipping it the other way. He's like, actually, don't be too thankful.
No, honestly,
don't be too thankful.
It honestly brought me to this, and something I'm actually really thankful for, and this is coming from the heart, and it's something I wanted to say to you guys. Actually, was I'm thankful that I've had the opportunity to work with you, because literally you both were kind of my first foray into media, and you've helped me grow in so many different ways, and I've really enjoyed working with you, and I would never be where I am today had it not been for working with you on those MLS shows, in studio, but also through extra time, and you guys, you know, including me and making me feel welcome. So
one, that was very kind, Charlie, and touching, but two, I appreciate that the crux of it was, because I'm flying high now, but I still respect you guys now. He's still boots on the ground with us, the common folks that he started with.
Look, am I in the big leagues now?
He's Jurgen Klopp now. He's national team.
Yeah, but when I want to come troll back to independent league baseball, it's the best, man. I'm with all my friends. No.
Dude, I'm fine with being part of the posse, Charlie. I'm fine with that. Dude.
Don't you take a positive and turn it into a negative.
I'm sorry, Charlie. I haven't got my turtleneck in the mail. Yeah. Oh, where's my velvet blazer? I see. Yeah, okay. Well, and,
it's,
you know,
coming.
Those words are good, but I need action from you right now. No, but seriously, we're here on Thanksgiving.
That was nice.
Producing Anders in the background. I said I wasn't going to do it, but thank you to everybody who listens to this show. Like, we would
but
do
mainly
this.
Thanks to Anders for making all of this happen.
Mostly thanks.
We
to
would
Anders,
not who be breathing without him.
Keeps us in line. Seriously. Who gives us time cues that we ignore. Who makes sure that we don't miss things. But thank you all of you out there. And it's been a wonderful year. It's obviously not over yet. But yeah, I mean, look, if I didn't like you guys, I wouldn't be here on Thanksgiving, I don't think.
Yeah, for sure.
They pay us to do this as well.
That's a lie. Yeah.
I would be less enthusiastic about being here on Thanksgiving.
If you're a Pinocchio, your nose would be poking through the computer.
Just straight through the... Good thing we're not on YouTube for this one, huh? All right, let's talk about the game today on Thanksgiving. We'll get to Tuesday night in just a little bit. We know the Portland Timbers are a conference finalists. It's been about 3 years since they've made any sort of run. They are conference finalists now without arguably their two best attacking players in Sebastian Blanco and Dairon Asprilla. Again, Asprilla, we don't know for sure yet. And Charlie, you and I will talk about this on Instant Replay here at some point. Yep. We'll talk about that call in just a little bit. This is, for the Rapids, it's really disappointing. We talked about how wonderful it is to have fans, supporters in the stadium, bringing atmosphere, bringing life. You know, bringing that moment where you walk into the building and you're just like, you know, goosebumps.
Oh,
like, oh my
here.
God, this is going to be an incredible night, like afternoon, day, whatever time it is. And like when you saw that crowd going bonkers pregame, yeah. I was texting my buddy, Nick Rivera, who I know from Wichita and now lives there and has had season tickets for a couple years. So he was there in the Anthony Hudson, like, you know, CCL's preseason days.
He goes
to every game. He made sure he went to this game. He made sure that like his family stuff wasn't the right time. And he was, you know, his girlfriend went with him and, you know, everybody got behind it. And then it's just, and I'm not saying disappointing the Timbers move on, but disappointing for the Rapids as a club that in this moment on Thanksgiving Day with a packed house, after you finished first in the West, after you had sort of, you know, laughed in the face of everybody's expectations of you, that you had, you know, and not like coined a new way to compete in professional sports, but you had perfected it via MLS's mechanisms to get to this 90 minutes of opportunity and have that pass you by.
I hate to say
that's super
kind of predictable though. And you know why? It's because they lack creativity in the attacking part of their game, in that attacking phase. They lack creativity and they lack a game changer, a match winner, right? Dom Baji, he's going to give you work rate. That's a given. And you could go out and find anyone really who's going to run their their butts off, run into the channels, be strong. But you need someone who can give you goals and someone who's going to make runs into the box and be able to beat
you on the
dribble.
But Charlie, this is not on Dom Baji.
Dom Baji, but it's on Colorado to find someone who is a capable number nine as a star.
We have been saying this all year, and it hurts me to come back to this at this point. But
yeah,
no, it was the only thought process I had as the game finished out was the, like, it's going to sound cliche because we've talked. It was the question all year. Do they have that killer player that can get them over the top? And they didn't have Hany Mukhtar tonight. They didn't have Sebastian Blanco.
Anomaly is not that guy.
Right. They didn't have Reynoso. So whether it's a 9 or a 10 or a winger, whatever it is, they didn't have at any point someone where they didn't have someone who could just make something out of nothing and change the game for them. And I would argue in terms of like creativity, they created chances. I mean, they had
different
looks.
Types of chances.
Fair.
It's for me, it's all the same. It's off of crosses, wide play, or set pieces. You know, it's not combinations. It's not a through ball. It's not, you know, someone dribbling two or three guys. It's not there's it all seems kind of the same type of chance for me when I'm watching them play. It's almost like generic. It's effective because they do it really well and they're organized, but if a team like an experienced Portland Timbers side that is going to drop deep, make it difficult, you need to have something else other than your typical generic wing.
Or you actually don't even need something else. You just need to finish the chances that you created.
But, yes.
And they
did. That's the, back to but Weeby, the point back is,
someone being
I know, I know. I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah. But the point is, though, Weeby, is if the Rapids finish chance – what I assume would happen because of what we just watched happen over the course of three playoff games, there's a game where people don't finish. And if you have a Blanco or you have a Hany Mukhtar, then you can still win.
Right.
And the Rapids were incapable of that. The Rapids blew the doors off the first, 25 minutes of this game?
Yeah. I mean, really for the first, for sure, the first half, they were really the only team. It was legitimate to make like Timbers RSL jokes. If are they even going to
Seattle
attempt
RSL
to go
but
forward?
But that was the tactical game plan. Like, so it might have been like, oh, okay, Colorado's running the play, but that's how Gio Savarese wanted the first half to go as far as his team not making any mistakes, absorbing the pressure, and looking to counter. That was the game plan. And for the most part, just Colorado didn't leave themselves exposed, and they played a great first half, but they came out without scoring. And if you do that against Portland and you keep it close, it forces you to – and the crowd is obviously there pushing you to go forward and taking more risks and more chances, and obviously that plays right into Portland's hands.
Yeah, it was you open up a Super Bowl, you go on a drive, you kick a field goal, right? Like you left points on the board there basically for – the Rapids, and it's frustrating because, you know, one of the big questions was, well, how will they handle the layoff? Wasn't a problem, right? They came out strong. They came out playing their soccer. They got the crowd behind them. We did a Twitter Spaces before. I questioned some of the lineup decisions. I think I still do to an extent that I think Baji and Rubio with Kellen at left wing back made them even more straightforward, to Charlie's point, than a Lewis or a Barrios or a Galvan out at left wing back, or even Estevez, although you'd rather not start him in this game. Any of those players would have been different. And so it felt like they went with all straight line runners size to start, and then they brought all those guys off the bench. And so then it was too homogenous, and it wasn't the mix and match that I wanted. And so I think
it would have made sense. It would have made sense if they scored in the first half, right?
Yep,
like instead of having a lump.
And Kellen
crosses,
was really good at left wing back in that first
half. He was. The whole game seemed to run through him of finding him space, of like rotating it back for Trusty to play that ball on an angle and assuming that, you know, whether, you know, that Van Ranken wasn't going to be touch tight and that Dairon Asprilla wasn't going to have his head sort of on a swivel and understand the space in a way to prevent the service. It all worked. If they get the goal, then they have those two guys to bring in, up a man as Portland push with their fullbacks going forward.
But you don't need both
massive
of them
gaps
to bring in. That's the thing, right? Barrios or Lewis, either one would have done it.
Yeah, I know.
Would be able to take advantage of that. And that's what was a little frustrating to me. And I also think, as much as I've joked about this all year, that Barrios is not a guy you want to rely on. He has the most experience in this moment, pretty much of anyone in that attack. Right? He's been here before, whether it's been successful or not. So I thought that there was a little bit of a miss there. But again, if they score their chances, then this game's probably over, because Portland literally wasn't in this game until the last 5 minutes of the first half. And so that's something that I think the Rapids are really going to kick themselves about going forward.
Portland got to be happy, though. Got to be a little disappointed, though. Sebastian Blanco pulling up that right hamstring, I think it was. I mean, it might have been left. I don't know. Either way, one of those hamstrings is in a bad place. You feel for him in this moment, seeing the emotion come out of him, knowing the journey that he's been on just to get back to this place. And also the, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily the uncertainty with the Portland Timbers, but they are working on a new contract. And now they move on. I can't imagine he will play a role going forward here. What, it's 17 days till MLS Cup if they even get there? And and based on what it appeared happened with his hammy, that's probably it for him.
Yep.
Dyron's the red card. Charlie, you got a thought on that one?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that's interesting to me is maybe, just maybe, Diego Valeri hasn't played all that much. This could be a moment for him to come in and kind of give you something similar to what Blanco can give this Portland Timbers side. I'm not saying he's going to do the exact same thing, but maybe something similar. Maybe there's this that boost, knowing that, okay, I got fresh legs. I haven't really played that much. I can give the very, you know, last bit of magic that I have for this playoff run. So maybe you could say, okay, there's a fallback plan. But with Dyron Asprilla, and for me, this is a soft red. There, you could see Galvan, he's pushing, they're going at it, and then you're just pushing down. For me, it would be the equivalent of Dyron Asprilla pushing Galvan in the chest if Galvan was standing straight up and he wasn't bent over. So I think by letter of the law, I think they got this right, because I think he did make contact with the head, face, in the head region. But I do think this was soft. Really do. This wasn't a punch. This was like a push down, and it made contact with his head. So I do think it's soft. But by letter of the law,
Dave's right. It's soft in a way where you're like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, you can't do that on a soccer field.
What are you doing? What? It's soft in the way of like, you put yourself at the mercy of the laws.
Yes.
And he does touch Galvan in the face, the side of the head, and it's not negligible force. So I agree with you. By letter of the law, there's no way they're going to look at that on review and be like, at least in the game, video review, and say, nope. Like,
right.
Is there a possibility the independent review panel could review it and reverse it? I mean, I guess so. I think I'm right about that, I'm wrong. So
this isn't a case where he's retaliating with a punch or an elbow or like a real intent to injure. That is not the case. This is a case of like, I'm just getting back at this guy because he's been pushing me and hitting me, which he did it twice. Galvan did it twice. And then at the third time, you're just like, all right, I've had enough. I'm gonna give a little shove back. Galvan was bent down. So I do see the argument, but at the same time, like you said, you're up a goal. That defenders are going to try to get you to react, to get some sort of advantage. And if they can get you sent off, they're going to get you sent off. If you're going to be foolish enough to take the bait, he did take the bait. And so at the end of the day, it does fall on him, because you have to be smarter in that situation. And don't let the ball go. And get back into position.
For sure. Like, so, what do you, you had nothing
like,
to gain there. You're
in
up 1-0.
Position.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think that'll be the frustrating part, but it'll be interesting. Obviously, we'll preview it going forward. I didn't think Portland had enough to win this game. You lose Blanco, you lose Asprilla. But
I just looked at the stats. Like, the second half, they actually created a ton. From like the 60th minute onward, if you look at just an XG.
I mean, they had the goal cleared off the line.
Well, Jimmy Chara, I think he should have made contact with the ball and finished it off the Felipe Mora cross in the 84th minute. But
2.1 expected goal. That's a pretty legit number.
It is.
It's a pretty good number. What'd you think of the goal they actually did score? The Mabiala goal. That's his second in the postseason. So
yeah, I mean, I said he's a beast.
On a set piece. This is like the thing about the Rapids too, is like they didn't get the goal and then they lose on a set piece, which has been sort of their
conventional moment because of the way the deflection comes off Kellen. I think once that ball comes off Kellen, it changes the spacing of your defending. It's not a hard driven ball into the gaps where you've predetermined who's where, your assignments, how you're going to handle it, and then you clear it out. Once that ball pops straight up in the air, it changes everyone's spacing. The moment that's awkward to me, and I don't blame him in any way, is I think Keegan Rosenberry, with Felipe Mora going down, didn't want to look like he was going to give away a penalty. And I think he kind of steps away from the ball where it then bounces and Mabiala gets his shot away in a way that he could have kept his body there to. Normally, you're just going to try and find the ball and just get yourself in the way. But I think with Mora going down, Rosenberry doesn't want to come down on top of him and make it look like a penalty. So he sort of steps over him and steps away. And it's credit to Mabiala, right? He's battling. He gets there. I understand what you're saying, Weeby, and that this is their sweet spot defensively. But I think when it takes that deflection, it resets everything and changes
everything. I don't disagree. It's not like Mabiala came in, was marked, traditional, like whipped in ball, dunked it on you, and you're like, my God, or like you missed the mark, or you don't have him. It's just like an unfortunate bounce. You know, it bounces off Keegan's back, and you can see him sort of like look around, and he just sits there, and Mabiala reacts, and he reacts well. And that's it. I mean, Timbers fans got to be pretty frustrated with us right now because we are like,
for sure,
we are mourning the Rapids. we are not giving the Timbers much credit. But I think you got to give Gio Savarese a good amount of credit here. Like,
yes, absolutely. And that's why that's why Goss and I took Portland over Minnesota.
Nope.
No. Was it Weeby?
No.
Was it me? Ryan Solo?
Like I don't know if this is a bit Yikes. That you just tried to pull, or you're like, oh, did nobody else? Is it only me that was right?
I thought you guys strange. Were both on my side there.
But, I had Colorado.
I'm saying Portland over Minnesota in the first.
Oh, I had Minnesesota.
I had Minnesota.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
We don't stand with you, Charlie. We stand on the wrong side of history.
I gave Portland the nod over Minnesota in that first matchup because, yes, they're playing at home, but more importantly, Gio Savarese. He just has a good understanding of tactics and how to get this team to win in those big moments. And you said we haven't seen them in the playoffs make this kind of run since, what, 3 years ago? It feels like last year because, you know, they won the MLS's back tournament, right? And so I just think about, oh, no, they're always competing. Gio Savarese, one, I would have loved to play for him because you can tell he's a player's coach. He's got this passion about the game. It's contagious. But I think he does understand how to win matches. And he knows the strengths of his team. Right now, they have to defend first. And they have players like Dairon Asprilla and Jimmy Chara. And they play into space. And they hope that whether it's Felipe Mora or Nish Gota can get in a good position for a cross or set pieces with Mabiala because he's an absolute beast. What a target. And they play that way. And it works. So I thought just because he has a good identity and the it seems like the whole squad's bought into the tactics and the locker room and the philosophy that this with combined with the experience, I thought this kind of is everything that they needed to make this run. So that's why I kind of gave them the nod. And he's a man manager, and you could tell he's good with his tactics.
He's definitely in his sweet spot, that's for sure, in this moment. And sort of to Charlie's point, what you said, Weeby, of like Timbers fans are going to hate us. It's kind of like because we've seen this show before, right? Like we're back. Gio's in the playoffs. They're sitting deep and countering, and they can be effective that way. And they have talent. Like I guess maybe that's where a little bit of the excitement goes away. Of like what the Rapids was doing felt new. What happened to RSL was ridiculous, and you know Philly's run. If they continue, like
Hani Mukhtar came good and was like, hey, it's me. Like,
right.
Yeah. And so then with the MVP
and with the Timbers, it's like Sebastian Blanco is one of the best players in MLS history. That's not something we learned last week. Right. And then you come in this week and it's like, this is a team that can put numbers behind the ball and keep their numbers clean, you know, keep their lines clean and be effective. None of that's new. We know Gio's not good. He's great at this. He won in NASL this way. He's won here. He has an ability, as Charlie said, to tap in. We talked with Zach Valentin about this last week, too, of like the way he not just manages players, but then the way he dials in at playoff time. It's not that he takes it up a level, but it's that he his message to each player is very specific and individual about what that this time of year means and what they can do for the team. And so we know all of that is possible. Hence why I think when we did our previews, it was like, if Blanco shines, they can go to MLS Cup. Now, the question is, can they do it without him? Which is pretty interesting because they've already got the momentum. They've already got the confidence. So I think they're a step past where I thought they'd be going into the conference finals, even without Blanco.
And I think without Blanco and without Dairon, assuming Dairon's not there, I mean, it's Gio leaning even further into this. He has a rallying point for his team of look, they won't believe in you again. Like this is the game we'll play. Don't be apologetic about it. Defend hard. Look for your moments. We have the talent to get out and counter. Why can't they do it? Sporting Kansas City, RSL on the other side. Like, you know, Kansas City is rejoicing right now. They're going to have to find a way through the RSL wall that is David Ochoa, but they're rejoicing because they could be hosting a conference final. And that certainly was not expected after everything that happened to them in the last couple weeks of the season. And on decision day, obviously, to be in this place, they've got to be delighted. But the Timbers have got to be saying, why not us? Why not? Yeah, Blanco's out. Blanco was out most of the year. Yeah, Dairon's out. Well, you know what? In past seasons, we didn't really have Dairon in the regular season. We were okay then. I don't know. We'll see. Congratulations to the Timbers. Congratulations to Dairon. Excuse me, not to Dairon. Congratulations to Larry Mabiala for two big goals. Now we'll see what happens out in the Western Conference. For all those people yelling about the West being best, man, sure looks like the East looks a little bit better right now.
Ooh,
fighting. A little.
I'm just saying. I've been saying. We got. Which one do you do first from Tuesday? You want to do the David Ochoa?
Yes.
Super troll job, or you want to go Hani Mukhtar?
Super troll.
Oh.
Since
I don't know how
they
did it.
Might as well just keep going.
I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how they did it. Real Salt Lake went to Seattle and they didn't take a shot.
It's one of the great David Goliath
and one
wins in MLS history. I was with someone, Dan Stelly, who we work with at MLS and have known for a while. We were out in Nashville. We went and watched the game and like we were stunned, but in a way of like, it's sort of something I think it's hard for me to comprehend because it's such a parity driven league in MLS of like, there's nothing ridiculous. This RSL team with no leadership from the top, with very little financial input, Rusnak testing positive for COVID and pulled out of the lineup, a guy who started 34 games for them and was their second most effective attacking player, going into Seattle, which is as probably intimidating an atmosphere as there is in the playoffs, against the team that's getting Jordan Morris back, getting Rui Diaz, getting Nico Ladero, and Cruz without all of them, to win in any fashion is absurd. It is absolutely absurd, and it will go down as one of the great upsets.
But it's even more absurd the way that they did it. If they win 1-0 off like a set piece, or if they win 1-0 off like holding it till the 85th and then Anderson Julio just runs away from everybody and just like, you know, annihilates the ball through the back of the net and Steph Fry has no chance. Like, okay, well that would be like, oh yeah, this is David and Goliath if David didn't throw a rock. Like if David just like hung back and was just like, okay, well, how much time has passed? Like, hey, Goliath, don't come forward. Like, hey, just wait. And then in the end,
rope-a-dope,
I don't know,
baby.
It's like, what, Goliath like threw a rock off a something and it like rebounded back and hit him in the face and he fell down? Because that's sort of what it felt like for the Sounders.
Pretty much. I mean,
and throughout all of this, you know, David Ochoa is just doing David Ochoa stuff. Like the star of the show is from the 24th minute on. It's a time-wasting goalkeeper of the entire game. A game in which Jordan Morris is back making his first start in the playoffs with Rui Diaz and Nico Ladero waiting on the bench that has Christian Roldan and Demir Krylock.
But if you're going to do it, that's how.
Jao Paulo.
You either have to have a center back play this absurd game where they win everything, or you have a goalkeeper be the star of the show. And that's what happens. And what I love about it, obviously, is that there's no goalkeeper more equipped to have that attention on them than David Ochoa. Like, he wants it. He thrives on it. He's playing the crowd. That starts to play the Sounders. I think they start to get frustrated about it. He's love. There's one moment in the penalty shootout where he walks over and you could see one of the ARs or maybe the head ref says to him, like, remember 2 feet on the line. And he looks back and does like 1 foot, 2 foot. Like he's trolling the refs because he's just engaged everywhere and loving it. It's awesome. And obviously he has things he needs to develop. I don't know how many flair goalkeepers there really are at that highest level, but he's got the potential to be special because all of the things he's comfortable with and he does well are the things that you can't teach. And so the rest of it, as he gets older and more games and more experience, as that comes.
Poof, I mean, very few are the people that are that comfortable in a situation highly emotionally charged. Comfortable not just saying, oh, I guess I am the heel, saying, look at me, I am the heel, and I am going to literally tap dance on your feelings for the entirety of this match. And every bit of negative energy you feed back into me, I am going to recycle and use to just like recharge my engines to do all of this again. Charlie, I'm not going to say that you were a heel. I will say that you, you enjoyed, I don't know how to say this, you enjoyed some attention. Like, you enjoyed being in a spotlight. You enjoyed doing things on the field in a way that people would talk about or smile, like, or that would...
Watch yourself. Word this correctly.
Yeah, I'm trying to here.
Yeah.
Where does this come from? Like,
he's
this,
on the tightrope. He's
this,
like,
yeah, I am. This feels like something, again, like David said, that you can't teach, that just kind of either you become or you are. You become through experiences as a kid, as a young adult, and he is still absolutely a young adult at 20.
I think throughout your performances, as you gain experience, you realize, you know, it's at some point it's just fun, right? It's fun in games. Then you realize that there was a point for me where you're like, oh, I maybe crossed the line, right, with an excessive celebration or something that, you know, probably didn't need to do.
And you had a regret.
Yeah. Just because you were caught in the moment or maybe you were frustrated throughout the game and something went your way. And so you kind of went over because you had all this pent up, you know, aggression. But I think he's going to find his soft spot or find that, like, that middle ground for him where it's, you can still be the antagonist and you can still be this guy that everyone just can't stand it. You know, I can't tell you how many people I've played against that I maybe have never even had a conversation with, but I knew, I'm like, I can't stand that guy. I cannot stand that guy. He just looking at him makes me mad. But then you have a conversation with him, or he ends up getting on your team, whether it's through a trade or you know, mid-season acquisition or, you know, at the beginning of the year. And then you're like, oh man, I like you. Like, I always tell T.O. Bunbury, before we played together, I was like, oh, you wore the number 9 shirt. Like, after, you know, I had, you know, gone through the car accident and I'm watching like who's going to try and, you know, take the number 9 spot now. And he rocks the number 9 in January camp and scored and like did a dance. And I'm like, oh, like, that's it. He's like,
Teal Bunbury is your villain, Charlie.
I'm telling you,
he's like the nicest guy in the league.
I know. But to that point, I was like, oh, this guy's like young, cocky kid with swagger. And then he's on my team.
How dare he be young and cocky with swagger?
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, he is the salt of the earth. Teal, there's nobody better than Teal. Like, he's the sweetest, down to earth, like a person that wants to give back. But even Felipe, I felt the same way about Felipe up until we had him on this show.
Yeah, and he was amazing. And he's like, an amazing dude.
And then everyone I've spoken to that has shared the locker room with him, like, oh, he's a great guy. He's, you know, he's all about the team. And I'm like, what? Because on the field, I'll tell you what, you're ready to do a Dairon Asprilla and get sent off. So there are so many players like that. And I think for David Ochoa, it's finding the right professionalism with, you know, being able to use that passion that he has. So you can still, you know, be yourself without crossing the line. And I think he's still trying to figure that out.
I don't think he crossed the line in this game.
No, I don't either.
Yeah. Where? When?
I wouldn't say
he was good.
No, I wouldn't say he crossed the line, but when you're walking out of the stadium, Lumen, and you're looking at the fans, and it's already kind of a, you know, your team just, you're very fortunate to win that game. And you're trying to hush the crowd when you're going out. You know,
get out of here, Charlie. That is a class.
So soft. Oh my God.
But you know what I'm saying is, you know what you're, you know what you're bringing to yourself by doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all money.
That's what I'm
saying. Exactly. It's great. That's what I'm saying. He's just filling up his energy banks. He's like going. Yeah. He's like, I'm going. I'm about to go Super Saiyan in this locker room.
Stronger.
My point is, you want more people on your side than against you, and in the end, and I think by doing that, it's not going to help. That doesn't help you as a player.
I don't know, man. This is the David Ochoa game, or is it the? I mean, what did RSL? RSL didn't even attempt to. Let's go back to the game.
Before we do that, what about in Minnesota when he boots the ball? You know,
yeah.
Like, okay. That time, yes, that was a. You know,
is that crossing the line?
You could
or no?
debate. Look, there was a debate there as to whether what the intent was, whether it was just exuberance.
Do not
really been booed.
Do not.
But whatever.
But yeah, I also don't want anyone or you to think I'm saying don't be cocky and don't celebrate, don't be yourself. But I'm saying don't do things that will be unnecessary.
Yeah, you know, don't expose yourself if you don't have
yes,
to.
That's my point. Sure. Because as soon as there is a sliver where you kind of leave yourself vulnerable, people are going to try and tear you down.
Yeah, they're going to attack.
Yes, that's my point.
Yeah. Well, I think that's good guarantee advice. You this. Whenever the Wolves circle – every RSL fan is going to lay their life down to protect him. He is a club legend at, what, 20 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's just so crazy. They didn't even try to attack, man. Like, there didn't even seem to be – I'm just – like they didn't
they
have
anything to attack with, really.
Did they?
They had moments. I mean, no, they didn't register a shot.
They
so
don't
know.
They didn't they don't have
they
anything.
They had a couple speculative crosses.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were many opportunities for them to attempt to build from across the half line, or to say, you know what, I am going to take the onus here and I'm going to attack this fullback. They didn't want to do that, and I can understand why they didn't want to do that. Kalen's made this point over and over and over. When RSL open up, RSL get pounded, or they get pounded and they pound back. Dave, I know we've all made the point. I know you're pointing at yourself right now. You're not on YouTube, but yes, you've also made the point. So I get why Pablo did it.
They have.
I just gotta watch out, dude, because Kalen's infiltrating my household. My girlfriend's doing fake ETR hits, and she's referencing Kalen in them. I don't get referenced, so I'm worried. I just gotta make sure I keep my cred out there.
You gotta keep the references recognizable, right?
I always reference you guys.
Thank you, Charlie. That's why.
How would you feel? How should Seattle feel about this game and
oh
this
my god? By the way,
up into one.
Obviously, I think
they have to cut everyone's contract after this one. No, it's one of those games that could have happened to anybody. A team defends with their life, and they know that's the only way they can get something out of this game. Because if they try to play attacking and open themselves up, that you play right into Jordan Morris's hands. You're going to allow Jordan Morris run after run after run into your defensive third? No. So you defend, especially with Albert Rusnak out. You don't have too many players who can, you know, build out of the midfield, who can, you know, create, who can score. That's the only way you're going to play. It's almost like, hey, guys, we're playing for penalties to start the game. And if you guys want to advance, believe in me, we'll do it. They did. And so you have to give them credit. And for Seattle, you just say, hey, it wasn't our day, but we had a hell of a season. That's all you can do. And you look to get guys healthy for next year.
I agree with Charlie. Here's the thing that I didn't know is, I assume Toronto fans are salty about 2016 MLS Cup. I didn't realize that every neutral MLS fan was also salty about it. And the like chorus of, they won the game without taking a shot on goal. Sounds like 2016 MLS Cup. What's up?
Wait. Time out. That's not the rest of the fans being salty. That is everybody being like mind blown that Sounders fans, in being salty that they lost in that manner, can't remember that they won in that manner 5 years ago. It was your first MLS Cup. It's not that long ago. It was a historic moment. How do you forget? And then get on the internet, on Twitter, and be like, these bums can't even take a shot. Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, man, dude, Anders is melting down in the chat right now.
It's absurd. I'm sorry. I enjoy many Seattle Sounders fans as people and as supporters. And it was just like the selective memory there. It just hurt my brain. Like, you did this. And like, well, we had three shots. You didn't put a shot on goal.
Oh, give it to him.
You didn't like it's
you said,
not.
You said,
it's,
don't forget you don't, where you,
you
came
don't get
from.
A medal for having three shots but none on goal. You don't get one.
Well, you do get a medal because they won.
That's true. They won. Yeah. So in the end, their ugly victory was better than RSL's. Certainly.
Yeah.
They can be proud of it.
Well, I'll tell you this: what if RSL win again in Sporting Kansas City?
They're going to do the same thing, right? They got to do the same thing.
I would imagine. And can they do it twice in a row?
They did it in Kansas City on Decision Day.
Yeah,
by the way,
did it.
Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, ABC, ESPN Deporte, Sporting Kansas City, Real Salt Lake, in a conference semifinal. Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Right after that, also on ESPN, so go from ABC to ESPN, is Philly, Nashville.
There's no reason to say that they can't do it again. It would be a ridiculous thing to say, right? They did it on Decision Day, and they just did it to Seattle. You assume Rusnak's not back as well, so that's a factor for them. It's interesting because KC came out and beat Vancouver by sitting back and playing in transition. That's just going to be impossible against RSL. There's just no way that you can get them out, I think, far enough.
That's the Spider-Man meme, just on both sides of the field. It's like, you, me, us? Are we moving? Are we going to just stay here and look at each other? What are we going to do?
But the question mark, the joker, up the sleeve, whatever it is Peter Vermees said that Pulido was good to go last week and that they got ahead and he felt like he could steal another week of rest for him. They have him in the team, even if it's at whatever percentage, 70, 75%, 80%. I think that's a difference maker because I think Russell's playing well enough now that you have, and Shallowy, that you have to completely focus on them. And even the presence of Pulido, I think, just makes it too much. Right, him just being on the field, meaning you can't overload numbers wide. Everton Louise can't go wide all the time. He has to hang in the middle. Your center back can't be quick to be wide to jump and double team. All those moments, and then you leave Russell one-on-one or you leave Shallowy one-on-one.
Oh, they're not leaving either of those players one-on-one.
So then where's there? Like, at some point, you're missing a number, right? At some point.
They're defending with 11. I'll tell you right now, there are going to be 11 RSL players in the box at once.
You think Eric Holt's getting the start at center forward for this one?
Hey, drop in, play from withdrawn position.
It's called a flattened Christmas tree. The Christmas tree starts at the goal and ends at the top of the 18.
Caved in Christmas tree. Yeah exactly. Look, Sporting KC though, they're not exactly. I wouldn't say that their strength is breaking down a
low block.
A bunkered in low block.
Yeah.
They can do it, no doubt. And Alan Pulido would be a massive piece to help in that effort. But Alan Pulido hasn't played in how long? Like, it's not like he's like worked his way into a rhythm and he's been making these sub appearances and being so effective. And now you just drop him into the starting lineup.
But I'd also say, let's not forget about Graham Zuzi, because the way he played against Vancouver, which it's almost like he turned the clock back because he looked like he was up and down, energetic on the ball. Obviously, when you can strike the way he does, the way he hits a ball so clean from distance, that is how you get a low block to come out and engage. If you can shoot from distance, you're going to draw defenders naturally out of position because all of a sudden they can't drop as low and give you time and space. That's going to free up Graham Zuzi, or you're going to allow Graham Zuzi to continue to move all the way up the field because you're sitting so low, and he can whip in a perfect ball. And I think if you gave Graham 90 minutes to do that without any pressure, he will hurt you. He will find that one guy.
Now, look, Seattle, for all the shots they had, and what was it, like 21, three on frame? Something like that. I can't even remember at this point. Anders has it in the rundown. And yes, 21. They weren't creating chances where you're like, by God, how did they miss that? You know what I mean? Like, it was mostly there for RSL to defend. I mean, Ochoa had a couple saves. He had one off, I think, the header from Jaimar, maybe, off the set piece that was
Diaz
close.
The crossbar on the
Rui Diaz had volley. But that was like that was like an Easter egg chance. You know, like that isn't created out of something. That's Rui Diaz being like, F it. I have the technique. I'm going to give it a try. Should he have started Raul Ruidíaz? Did Brian Schmetzer make any mistakes here?
I think if he could have started Ruidíaz, he would have.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
I agree.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. All right, last question, and then we'll talk about Hany Mukhtar and Nashville and get out of here. Who's going to have a better season next year, Rapids or Sounders? Afterwards, Brian Schmetzer saying, hey, we got the CCL to look forward to. We'd like to keep the core together. We think they can get us another run here. Obviously, Nico's knee has been an issue all year long with the swelling. Ruidíaz in and out. Jordan Morris appears to be back. I think Giampaolo comes off a DP, can come off a DP deal, right? And they've got Leo Chu now, who they never really like integrated in a real way. Who has a better season?
You're asking who finishes higher in the standings?
No, I'm asking who has a better season. Like,
I can't see either of them falling off is the tough part for me. Because on top of all of what you just said, they got Jordan Morris for the year. Without making a move, without adding a single player, like they can bring in arguably their second best attacker next season. And my understanding with contracts is Yaimar's back. I think they have Alex Roldan under control, that maybe they give him a new deal because of the year. I think they'll look very similar, and therefore I think they'll be as good with the Rapids as well. Outside of Cole Bassett, I don't really know who's leaving. The whole question mark around the Rapids is, you've done it the right way. You've built the entire team. You've got an ethos. You've got a system to now bring the right DP in. Will they or will they not do it? That's the question mark for me with the Rapids. It doesn't have to be three. It could be one guy, but you are in the spot now.
More than zero would be a
well, Anomaly is
just go out
more
and
than
it.
I'm sorry. I'll respect to Yunus Anomaly. He was a non-factor for them this entire year.
Agreed. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a worldie, right? But you need to go out and get a striker. You need to and I think we've all seen, if you spend money on a nine who can get it done and consistently and work on both sides of the ball, not just only scoring goals, because we've also seen some players brought into the league who only score, and that's great, but it's the guys who can defend as well or give you something defensively on both sides of the ball. And I think if they can go out and find someone to invest in one player, that will change the game for Colorado next year.
We'll see what happens. Can they get a Hany Mukhtar maybe? I don't know, man. Hani's balling on people. 2 goals, 3-1 win for Nashville over Orlando City. That ain't a draw. They're moving on. They're going to Philly again Sunday, the second of that doubleheader, the first of which, you know, is Sporting Kansas City Real Salt Lake on ABC, 3 p.m. Eastern, then 5:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Philly Nashville. Ah, man. I think if Hani has this game before voting is over, he would have a shot at MVP, like a real one. I don't think he has a shot. The way voting went down,
you are living this MVP race,
dude. I've been riding this wave.
He won't give it up either.
Cowabunga, man! I'm just sitting on the edge, just carving.
The voting's in. Go home.
I'm just saying.
No, honestly, if they actually prolong the voting till next, let's say May, I think he really has a shot. Like he should be the unanimous MVP.
I mean, after that May 1st game at the Nashville, you know, Fairgrounds Stadium.
Oh,
in
man.
Which Hany Mukhtar is obviously going to, I mean, he is going to be the story of the day in Major League Soccer. He would have a shot.
Time ever in Nashville as a city at all, but also my first time, obviously, at a Nashville SC game. That stadium is going to be great because it was 25, 26K, I think, at this game. And, you know, you're in a big football stadium. It doesn't fit it properly. It's not the way you want it to be, but everyone stood the entire game, not just the supporter section. Every single part of the stadium, they stood the entire game. And we're locked in and engaged and a part of it. So that new stadium is going to be pretty cool. And I think once they get in it and get comfortable, I think the city is really going to start to like connect to what's happening. And they've got a successful team to follow. 2 years, 2 playoff wins. It's not that it's not that they get better in this moment, but I think there's no playoff team where you know, at this point with Seattle out, especially where you're like, oh, this team knows what a playoff moment is, right? Like Gary Smith has won in postseasons before. He's made runs with underdogs. They're not even an underdog anymore. And it just, while they did come out slow the first 15 minutes and Orlando was the better team, and then they score off the set piece, which is a huge issue for Nashville and something that they need to figure out how to clean up. you kind of, but you know that they're going to give you a playoff performance at some point. Like, they know what the moment requires. And Hany Mukhtar was the center of that. But I thought CJ Sapong was really important in this game as well. He holds center backs. He battles. He wins direct balls out of the back to let Hany Mukhtar get into the attack and link up with him. And then obviously he makes the run across the back line, which it's not like it was an advanced run. It's a pretty basic. Hany's dribbling at you. You get out of the way. And Antonio Carlos just decided to follow him as well. But he makes that run to create the space for that goal. So credit to him. And I think he's going to be huge against Philly. This game could go one of two ways. It could be Philly wants to press. Nashville can be very dangerous being direct because CJ and Hany can create on their own.
Or Randall Leal.
Although I haven't seen it with Leal in a while. Fair. But yes.
You're not wrong about that. Could pop up.
Or the other side, which is what Nashville struggled with the first 15 minutes was they were just sloppy with the ball. And if they create, if they give up those turnovers against Philly, they'll be down 1-0 before they really get their head around it. And while Dax is obviously a legend and Godoy's having such a great year, I think Philly can win central midfield in this game physically. And so then you're looking at a Nashville team which only has the direct ball as a way to create. So it's going to be an interesting matchup. I still have Philly. I picked Philly originally. I still have them as my favorites out of that side. But, you know, nothing I saw from Nashville on Tuesday night made me feel worse about the idea that they could win this game.
I got Nashville moving on. I think that they will. I think it just comes down to difference makers. And I think that between Walker Zimmerman, Annabelle Godoy and Dax and Hany and certainly CJ as well, I think those are all better players in those positions than Philly can put out. I just think individually Nashville are better in those spots. Charlie, any thoughts on that matchup, on Nashville's win against Orlando? I mean, we'll hit the mailbag. We got Bob Bradley at Toronto FC, which we haven't, like,
oh boy,
massive things are happening MLS, yeah. And we just have no time to talk about them, which I guess is our own fault for being too long on other things. Any final thoughts on Nashville and Philly?
Nashville are just legit. I mean, Hany Mukhtar, I know you're so high on him and you couldn't be any higher on a player. He might as well be playing at Real Madrid at this point.
Oh, my God.
But with the way they defend as a unit, as a team, but it's almost like Colorado in the sense that it's not like Colorado because they actually have Hany Mukhtar. So they're great at defending and they're super difficult to play against. But then they also have players like, yes, Mukhtar, but also Randall Leal as another player who can, you know, do something creative and play 1-2s and have that occasional hit from distance. I really like what they've been able to do with their squad. And that's a smart management. You know, obviously you look at what Gary Smith has been able to do, but Mike Jacobson going out and attracting the right kind of players to the club, Ian Ayre. And then, you know, I think when you look at this next matchup, Nashville, Philly, I mean, they're two completely different sides, right? I think Philly obviously thrive in transition. They like that, the hectic game. You know, it's if you get open, you're playing right into Philly's hands. I don't think Nashville will. I think they're very set. And if they do have that transition moment, it's only three or four going. It's not the whole squad, whereas I think Philly pushes the lines high and they will try and get after you. Andre Blake is going to have a big game and they're going to have to be really, I think, set on their set piece marking, because I do feel like that's an area that Philly's not the best at.
5:30 p.m. Eastern, Philly-Nashville on Sunday, ESPN, ESPN Deportes. Let's wrap up Orlando real quick. I mean, this is disappointing for them. Nani, is he going to be back? Mauricio Pereira, is he going to be back? Is Daryl Dike going to be back? We know Chris Mueller is already out. Up and down the team. It felt like built for this to be the run, and maybe for last year even to be the run, and things just kind of broke down in the wrong moments, whether it be Nani's health going into this. He doesn't start this match. He doesn't impact this match. You know, the preseason newcomer of the year doesn't even get to play all season. You know, Alexander Pato, you know, he had, you know, one hand on that award and it just didn't happen for him.
Stolen from his grasp.
Just, he, you know, ripped from him.
Yeah.
As if he...
I was going to say, for Orlando in general, I think you're right. They were trending towards this, but the cultural change that's happened under Oscar Pereja still exists. You know, they're a better club right now than they've ever been in their history. And I do think the pieces are there to sort of reshape this. And you lose Anani. I think they should move on from Pereja. He was fairly ineffective to me, even though he works really hard. Uri Rossell, you didn't get a ton from this year. Those are some big contracts, some big name players that maybe you're ready to move on for. I think what worries me for them is the play of Antonio Carlos down the stretch, where I thought he was defender of the year material halfway through the season. And then what was a strength of theirs, their defense, their back line, became a weakness over the course of the end of the year. And so they got to figure out, it was that, you know, was it the moment? Was it that Gallese was out for so much that they weren't able to really work together and be cohesive? Or is that a long-term issue? But I think going forward, I think Van der Water is going to be very good for them. Not DP level good, but very good. And obviously DK seems like is coming back again next season. And he has gotten better. He has become more dangerous in the run of play. And so I think there's a lot of promise there for Orlando if they could, if they replace Nani and Pereja with one DP that they can, you know, fits in and they can build around. I think that there should still be positivity for Orlando going forward. And I don't think that the window shuts, because I think the window accidentally opened because of Pereja early. And this is a long-term fix under Muzy and Pereja that Orlando can be competitive every single year. And I know their academy is going to start churning out players like soon, because Oscar's done it again and he's got the right people around him again. And there's a lot of talent that they're about to pop through.
We have one team in the conference finals right now. And as we're saying goodbye to Orlando and of course to Colorado and before that, others as well. I just realized the Revs haven't played a game yet, and there'll be nine teams out of the playoffs before the Revs play again.
It's ridiculous.
There'll be nine teams.
Maybe they shouldn't play, dude.
Out of a 14-team field. Out of a 14-team field. Nine teams will be eliminated before the Revs even play a game on Tuesday. That is nuts, man. Two more games on Sunday. Just throw them to you. 3 p.m. on ABC, 5:30 on ESPN. Full coverage, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app. Let's get to the mailbag and get out of here and go enjoy some time with our family. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Bob Bradley's wearing red. He's in Toronto, baby. That wasn't a secret. Everybody basically knew that that was happening. It was just a matter of time.
The worst kept secret in football.
Now that he's there, what do you think? I think the rest of the East better be a little concerned.
Oh, you have fear? You'd use the word fear?
Not fear. I said concern. You know, they had, for all the Western Conference folks, they're just like, Patsy's in the East. You got to play Toronto and Cincinnati. Well, Toronto's not going to be 2021 Toronto, I don't think, for very long. Now, that is both in results and in personnel, I would guess.
Yeah.
Bob got the full package, right? He got the full package, and I don't think he intends to stand pat in a lot of ways. He is now what's his title? Is it sporting director or is it GM?
I think it's sporting director. It wasn't GM. It was either technical director or sporting director.
Okay. Either way, it's the same thing as, like, you know, Peter Vermees or Bruce or a lot of these guys now that have sort of like the ultimate power. They build the team. They're the final say on personnel and they're the final say as the manager. Well, Bob has that. I would argue he deserves that. At least if he's asking for it and he wants it, it's going to be real hard to say no to him. And Toronto FC couldn't. Ali Curtis also out in this shakeup. So changes for Toronto. What do you think it'll look like under Bob?
The one thing I go back to is I think Bob Bradley is the, in the purest form, the best American soccer coach of all time. The way his teams play, the way he sees the game, his ability to affect his players is the best we've ever had. So there's a ton of issues at Toronto, but there's last year's MVP and potentially there's Soteldo, who, while it was a tough year, is a guy who scored goals in Copa Libertadores and is in his entering his prime and does it for Venezuela at Copa America and has elite ability. You've got Jonathan Osorio. You've got Marky Delgado. There are pieces there. And I look at what Bob Bradley was able to do with Danny Musovski at times, and the way he moved Latif Blessing into the central center and turned him into one of the best center mids in the league, and what he's been able to get out of Tristan Blackman at multiple positions, I think you're looking at a coach who doesn't need to just trash everything because he is able to get more out of pieces if it fits into his style and his philosophy. And then there is still elite talent at this club. So there's some serious things they need to clean up, but I think they've kind of been floating in this, are we win now, are we not? And I think Bob can answer those questions better than anyone else can. It does feel like it's not a rebuild because you don't bring Bob Bradley in right now to, you know, go through a 5-year rebuild at a club. Like, that's not what he's a part of.
Yeah.
But I think you have now more of a cohesive way to continue to stay to try to stay competitive while moving pieces in and out because of what he's been able to do. You know, I don't think he's a coach who's just like, I need a center back. Give me $800,000 so I can go get one. I think he's a guy who's looking at USL and Canadian Premier League and in Central America and all these things to find the right players. And so I think that possibility exists here. So it's going to be fascinating. I have zero idea what LAFC is going to do, which is the part of this that we haven't really talked about much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, as you said, we need like 9 more shows for all of this.
Charlie, you were a part of this. I just because it is going to be what people think about and talk about and tweet about. And, you know, Michael's at Toronto and Michael started 30 games this year. And now Bob is at Toronto and Bob has ultimate authority over the roster.
Right.
I mean, this is a human thing. It's not like I'm trying to say that it can't work. It's obviously worked before. They're both incredible, you know, personalities / players and coaches in this soccer sphere that we're in, like among the very best, the upper echelon of their respective sort of roles and positions within this little hierarchy that we have. But is it weird at all? Like, do you think it's going to be weird for those guys in that Toronto locker room? Like, especially given, like, when Michael was with the national team, it might have been weird because he was breaking in, but then he was undeniably good. And he was doing things at the club level that was special as well.
Yes.
This time he's 34, and yeah, he played 2,700 minutes this year and started 30 games, but he's 34.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying he's finished. I'm just saying he's on the back end. His bell curve is not the beginning or the middle.
No doubt he's on the back end, but I have to start with one. I have a tremendous, tremendous amount of respect for both Bob and Michael. I remember playing with Michael U18 national team camp. Like, it was my first kind of foray with, you know, the national team program, and kind of seeing him grow from that point on. And there was that initial awkward phase when Michael came into the national team, because it's not as if he was, you know, balling out of control and everyone's like, oh, he's like the next great talent like Freddie Adu or something. He had to work his way up, and it wasn't overnight. It was a process. But I can tell you one thing. Everyone knows without a doubt Michael Bradley was a baller. That is a fact. I mean, he did it in Europe. He did it with the national team. You know, I got to share on the field with him. He's a competitor. He's a soldier. He gives it his all, and is one of those players that always commanded respect because he respected the game so much, and he always felt like, hey, you better take it just as serious as I do, because they're both students of the game. They watch it religiously. They talk about it religiously, and so it's going to be interesting. Not so much the dynamic, because I've seen it. It's worked. It's Michael being 34 and not being able to play the way he used to play. So he can't cover the amount of space that he used to. You could play him as a solo six. You could play him in a 4-4-2 and him being one of the central midfielders and not having to play a defensive or an attacking midfielder, because he could make those late runs in the box. He covered so much ground. He can't do that anymore because he lacks the pace. He doesn't have – not that he was ever fast, but he's slowed down a step or two. So now in thinking that, you have to play – if he's playing in the midfield, you have to play with two other central midfielders. So that kind of handicaps – if you ever wanted some type of flexibility, he needs to probably be an 8, not so much a 6. Or this may be the time where you move him back as a center back and he's in the middle of a back three, or he's playing in a 4-4-2 and he's playing next to someone who's super athletic, who can make, because he reads the game so well. But if he has someone who can cover for him with the pace in behind, then it could work. But having that dynamic of your dad saying, hey, you're not going to play today, and Michael wants to be on the field, there's no doubt about that. So I'm interested to see how it's going to look. Obviously, he's a player that thinks he can play, you know, until he's probably in his 40s.
He thinks he's Tom Brady, man. Probably, yeah, right?
Right.
And I respect it. He's like, look, Preki says yoga. I've been doing yoga.
Right. And they're both – I mean, they're as intense as it comes when it comes to taking care of
their body. Don't doubt the level of competitiveness and intensity that's going to be –
both of them.
That's going to be running through this locker room. But I guess that's what I'm sort of asking is, like, there's a difference when that's, like, your star player and your head coach and you know, they're not related. I'm just curious to see what happens. I'm not saying anything bad's going to happen. I'm just very curious to see what happens when it's a semi-rebuild, bad season
and results sort of situation. I'll tell you right now, results matter. So if Michael's playing and they're winning, no one's going to say a thing. You can't. But if he's playing and things aren't going well, and maybe guys are, you know, start the chatter and saying, hey, it's not because of me we're losing, or it wasn't me who got beat for that goal. You know, those things can happen. But I'll tell you one thing. Bob could probably still beat half that team on any type of treadmill workout. I can tell you that.
And Rose? Nobody rows like that, man.
Nobody. I mean, he is.
Bent over Rose, he's chucking 65s.
He's serious. But no, I'm happy. I'm happy for Bob. I'm happy for Michael because they get to kind of reunite, and that's always special to play, you know, for your father or to coach your son.
Agreed. Look, and I couldn't help myself already looking down the line, and I'm not saying like Michael's going to retire anytime soon. But I mean, if you were going to bet on one guy to become a coach or a head coach and occupy some of the.
Yeah, and your dad's a sporting director and you're the head coach. Not a bad first job into.
You might think at some point that might happen.
On the timing on that, I just want to throw out Michael started at center back in a back three against Montreal in the Canadian Championship, and they got outshot 20-1. So just throwing that out there.
There are some things to work out in Toronto, whether it be Josie's future.
They didn't have a coach.
Yeah, yeah. Charlie, I'm not saying it won't work. I'm just saying that's the last thing we saw. I agree with what you said, though.
They're going to play. The one thing we know about Bob Bradley, and look, I know LAFC was very focused on this, but Bob is as well. They're going to play soccer worth watching.
Yeah, for sure.
You're going to want to tune in.
Speaking of Toronto area, by the way, see everyone in Hamilton January 30th for USA.
And Goss rolling to Canada. Let's go. But I will say this. Bob is a big fan of Barca, right? And was a big fan of Milan. If Barca could play with a Busquets or a Mascherano, not that I'm saying Michael Bradley is either of those two.
Listen, that, you like Busquets, you have to like Michael.
Similar style of a midfielder coming back and playing as a center back, just because they can see the field, they can anticipate things. And if you surround them with the right people, you can have success. That's what I'm going to say.
All right. Good call on Hamilton. Also the U.S. We're El Salvador in St. Paul?
No, it's Columbus and St. Paul.
Honduras,
Columbus and Allianz both got announced.
Yep, yep.
So one in
Honduras
and
Minnesota and El Salvador in Columbus for U.S. hosting World Cup.
It's
going to
be cold.
It's going to be really cold. Crazy cold. All right. Anything in the mailbag? Are we going to roll on out of here?
I think we're good. People want us to talk about Matt Beisler a little bit. Shout out to Matt Beisler. Congratulations on his retirement. And I think...
Let's just get it out of the way. Wesley from Kansas City, now in Austin. Can you please talk about Matt Beisler in light of his retirement? It's been nearly 2 weeks and you haven't mentioned him once. I get that other things are happening. I really do. But when one of the all-time great CBs of this league retires, it would be nice to hear you guys at least tell your audience he did, especially when you gave Wando over 10 minutes of discussion when he retired. No offense.
All-time leading goal scorer.
Now my regret here is that we didn't give Wando like 2 hours.
Yeah. Let's compare Wando and Beisler.
I ultimate respect for Matt Beisler. He has had a career that you would dream up and think you would never get to. As a kid in Kansas City, I want to play for my hometown team for more than a decade. I want to be atop all the leaderboards at that club when it comes to appearances, and I want to win trophies, and I want to play in a World Cup, and I want to be in best 11s and be a defender of the year, and I want to reach basically my my apex as a player. You know, I think Matt Beisler did all those things.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going with? Are you saving out of Europe?
I hear the kitties.
Yeah, he's,
no, but what I would say is Matt Beisler, I'll never forget that run going into the 2014 World Cup.
Yeah, he was incredible.
I was like, oh my God. He just developed rapidly under Klinsmann. And I think it was just the confidence and the freedom and the level that you're playing at within the national team. And I thought, this is the moment he's going to Europe. And I think in the right situation, he really could have excelled because he was a ball-playing center back, someone who was comfortable on the ball. I thought he read the game well. And, you know, he just had Casey in his blood. And you can't fault him for that. But, yeah, I mean, I wish him all the best. He's a great competitor too. Someone that I hated playing against. Not to the level of like, oh, I can't stand him. But I was like, oh, this is going to be a challenge. And I liked it. And he's a good guy and he deserves the best. So we all wish him. I know especially you, being a Kansas City guy.
Oh my goodness.
But he's just a top man. So I wish you the best.
I think he's also a lesson for a lot of younger players or just players in general that like where you start isn't where you finish. You know, I remember his first year being in the doghouse with PV and they're playing him at left back and it was a first round draft pick and you thought there was going to be more and. It just kind of seemed like he got off to a bumpy start and he figured it out, happens. Man. You figured it out.
You go to Notre Dame, that's kind of what happens.
Oh my gosh. He figured it out. And he made himself a staple in this league as far as the best center backs. You had to say his name because he absolutely was and had big moments with the national team. So,
yep.
Yeah, look, things got hectic. We're sorry we didn't give him his due, but congrats to Matt Beisler on a great career.
It's even better. Right. We gave it to him on Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
Oh, thankful.
Boom. On a holiday. And speaking of that, let's get out of here. My kids are yelling upstairs. I'm sure Charlie's are as well.
No. They're asleep.
Oh, well done. Yeah. Well done. Well done. Good job, Nina.
Champagne and wine. Let's go.
Good job. All right. That's it for us. Hashtag we will see you grateful. On Monday. Tune in on Sunday. Doubleheader, playoff doubleheader, starting with Sporting Kansas City RSL on ABC at 3 p.m. Eastern and then 5:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Philadelphia, Nashville. We'll be back on Monday, but there will be a post-game show on Sunday night after the final whistle of those games. And then the Revs will finally play on Tuesday. So yeah, the Audi year, 2021 MLS Cup playoffs roll on. Hit us up. Let us know what you're thinking about. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you on Monday.